This is a Mexican crossing lines. Hello, and welcome to A Mexican Crossing Lines. This is your host, Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You're listening to 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And we are also broadcasting online through Shoutcast. You can go to kpppfm.com and listen live online. Today, I am talking about the racism in Bismarck. And there has been a recent iteration of that after some water protectors went to the Bismarck Mall and tried to hold a prayer circle. And I have two special guests in the studio with me today, William Pham and Mauricio Salgado, both of whom were arrested on that day. And I'll be interviewing them and talking to them about their experience. But I wanted to share with our listeners that what we witnessed, because we saw the videos, you and I, Duke, saw the videos of what occurred that day. What we witnessed was a group of people who went into a shopping center where many flash mob type of dance type of actions occur and have occurred for years. We've seen them in public spaces like public squares and malls on YouTube videos and social media for years. And usually people clap politely and maybe go up and shake people's hands afterwards. And that's not what happened this time.
No.
This was really violent, militarized response to a group of people getting together to hold hands and pray at a mall. They were not blocking the commerce of the mall. I watched the videos myself. People were able to go back and forth and shop all they wanted. And yet, people were rushed by very heavily armed, militarized, riot-looking police. And as they were dispersing to leave the action, were grabbed out of the crowd and thrown down and arrested. So within that context, that is what the two gentlemen that are sitting in my studio today experienced. And I wanted to give you both an opportunity first to introduce yourselves and tell us where you're from. I'll start with you, Mauricio.
Excellent. Thank you, Cindy and Duke, for having us to share our stories. I was born in Arlington, Virginia, raised in Miami, Florida, lived in New York City for 15 years. I'm now in Providence, Rhode Island, but I was conceived on the coast of Colombia, as my mother likes to say, over a very riotous dance party.
That's wonderful. And what moved you to come to Standing Rock?
You know, I grew up in a household of very civically engaged people. My parents run a community center down in South Florida that provides services for undocumented immigrants called En Familia. And so I grew up in that space, engaged in the work with the people of Central America, the Caribbean, and South America. So that I went into acting was only because I came from a background that used forum theater and Augusto Boal techniques of organizing community, and have since then started a nonprofit called Artists Striving to End Poverty that provides services for communities around the world, ways of engaging art in order to empower people. And so this was that being here is a progression of a life committed to standing with and alongside the rights and the needs of our people and our communities that are oppressed by systems and structures.
How about you, William?
For me, it's number one is the environment. I got to stand with Standing Rock for that reason alone. And number two, it's seeing the militarized police as a veteran is like a slap to the face for me.
Well, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us where you're from and give us a little bit of your background so people can understand.
Well, I am William Pham. Thanks again, Cindy and Duke, for having us. I am William Pham. I originally was born in, or originally, what I was born in San Francisco, grew up in Texas, and now I live in San Diego.
And what moved you to come to Standing Rock?
Yeah, as I said, I feel like the Standing Rock, protecting the water, for sure, number one. And then number two, like I said, was seeing the militarized police on social media and in the news as a veteran is a slap to the face. And it shouldn't be like that against our own citizens.
You do know that there is a large group of 2,500 veterans that are coming.
On the 4th, yes.
To Standing Rock. How do you feel about that?
I am proud of them. And I am, yes.
You stand in solidarity with them.
Yeah.
So both of you were moved to come to Standing Rock. As many people that I have interviewed have told me, they've invested a part of their life into this, whether because they're coming from a community that has been ravaged by illnesses, deaths, kidnappings, sex trafficking, and pollution as a result of extractive industries. And they have their own horror story to tell about what happened in their town, what happened on their res. And now they're here because they feel the same pain, and nobody came to their rescue and nobody cared. And they feel a responsibility because they know what it feels like. So there's a group of people that are like that. And then there's another group of people who have devoted a lifetime, many of them with parents like yours, Mauricio, who have spent their lives helping people that are, as we would say in our society, the least of these, you know, the people that are the most vulnerable in society. Part of what I wanted to discuss with you today is this attitude, which I believe is bred of racism, that is permeating the Bismarck area. And I wanted to ask you about your experience, not just by the militarized police response, but from the public that was at the mall. I remember William told me that somebody said to him, go home. But what was the atmosphere like? Would you like to start first, Will?
Yeah, it was very negative. I felt very racially profiled off the bat. When I got there with my group, there was a big truck, and the guy just felt like he was instigating. He was taking a picture of me or a video. And all I can do was just smile and, you know, yeah. And we walked through the mall. It's funny because I was with a guy from Scotland, of all places. And so he, on the outside, he looked just like any other regular person, but he was walking with me. And then we were walking through the mall, and these two women who worked at a department store that I won't say, but they were kind of antagonizing him because he was with me. They were like, because he was wearing some gear for the cold, and they kind of teased him, is it cold outside? And I saw that, and it's like, wow. You know, he was getting antagonized because he's walking with me. It was, you know, wow, kind of eye-opening.
That's the new way of the Trump America. I have heard many similar stories like this where the first kind of wave of water protectors that were coming out of the jail, a lot of them were white.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really traumatized. Because they were being thrown to the ground, heckled. And that's a nice way to say that really they were being accosted, people screaming in their faces so close that they were spitting on them. Saying really xenophobic things like, go back to where you came from and get out of here. Nobody wants you here, or hippie, or back the blue, screaming it in their faces, things like that. And they're like, I was looking at a person that looks like me, like, you know, my people, and they're screaming at me. because I'm with the Water Protectors. What was your experience like, Mauricio, of that?
I went to that mall with a handful of friends, loved ones who identify as white. And I immediately, when I walked into the space, had a sense that the space was militarized. There were a lot of police in very heavy gear, standing kind of at each corner of the mall with a lot of zip ties. So I had a sense they were ready. They knew what was coming. And I immediately could sense their eyes on me. And so I told my group, listen, I'm going to break off from you guys because I don't want you all being put into that same category as I am. And it was tough in that moment to split apart from my wife and be like, hey, I think I'm going to walk this one alone because I just, I don't know if I was like feeling the isolation and had to like try to find a way to become invisible in that isolation. I'm not sure what I was thinking, but I was just caught in the nerves of all of that. My arrest was simple. I understood that in the moment that I was grabbed by a police officer, I needed to be cool and calm because of my skin color, I didn't want to be beat in any way. So I was easy about it and quiet, and I didn't speak for those first couple of hours that we were in jail either. Which brings me to another point about, I think, the nuances of racism that are we experience not just in Bismarck amongst people who are in opposition, but also amongst the white folks who are coming, that you described two kinds of people that are coming to this thing, but there are other kinds of people that are participating in this. There are people who are participating in this with great curiosity about this historical moment. There are people who are participating in this out of excitement because it's something cool that's happening and that they want to be a part of. And then what happens is that for all of us, we've all got to do the work of checking our privilege when we walk into these spaces, mm-hmm. and how we make this an indigenously centered movement, mm. and that we are all drinking, we are steeped in the water of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And so even at camp, there's a lot of conversation, especially in the orientation and in decolonization meetings, of how mm-hmm. everybody at these camps needs to be checking themselves,
mm-hmm.
Because we've all got to come correct. And unfortunately, some of us are coming correct at the expense of the indigenous leaders in the work, or without consideration of that. And I felt that a bit, you know, again, the nuances of age and experience. So there were 33 of us who were arrested. And we were arrested with 19 other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And there was definitely within their conversation, there was a wide array of experience and of privilege mm-hmm. that at times they were checking and at other times they were not checking.
Mm-hmm.
And for myself as a person of color, just kind of staying quiet, like I can't participate in your conversation right now because I'm in a lockup. And if I participate in this conversation, I don't need any of this stuff incriminating me or like turning back against me. I don't have the privilege of talking the way the rest of you are talking about this moment, idealizing it, romanticizing it, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that to say, definitely, right, the racism is present on the opposing side, but the racism is also entrenched even within the movement. It's
of
a
course.
Work that we all have to be digging real down and deep, and I'm guilty of it too. I come from a privileged space,
mm-hmm.
from academia, and I'm also having to deeply question, why am I here and to what expense? And are my resources being used the best way, et cetera, et cetera?
It's a critical thing. I mean, it's a critical moment to think about how we are involved, in what ways are we. And more important than anything is we need to let the leadership, the Lakota people, the Dakota people, to come from them. And anyone coming in with other ideas needs to shed that. Because what happens when people try to tell the stories for someone else, and they're in a privileged position, is that they usually get that wrong. And one of the things that's very concerning to me that I wanted to talk about on this show, about the racism in Bismarck, but it's not just the racism in Bismarck, as you pointed out, Mauricio, it's everywhere. I mean, we didn't get a Trump president because, you know, magic happened. the circumstances, the environment for a Trump presidency has been present in our country. Mm-hmm. It's a reflection mm-hmm. of our country. And people want to try to erase it or whitewash it. And, you know, it's Trump, it's Trump, it's not me. It's all of us. Mm-hmm. And the sooner that we start checking our privileges and really thinking critically about what our position of power in is in this movement, the sooner we'll actually be able to work toward progress. And that is something that is deeply, deeply needed in this discussion. Mm-hmm. One of the things that really concerns me about this is the shock, I guess, that people have expressed at having not only, I mean, they came here knowing, oh, like the police are really militarized. You know, they've seen rubber bullets shot at people. They've seen people standing in the river freezing and have been maced in the face and shot in the face. And they've seen the night of the 20th and 21st when they were being shot with water cannons for 8 hours and being shot with concussion grenades. So they're preparing themselves in their minds, those who are ready to come here, courageous enough to come here, united in solidarity with the need to protect this land and this water. But most of them seem completely unprepared for the response from the citizens of the state and the people in the area.
Yeah,
they seem like, you know, I don't get it. I couldn't understand why they were treating me like that. They were yelling at me and they were pushing me. It seemed to me, and I don't know if either one of you can confirm this. I'll start with you, William, but it seemed to me like there was a group of people in that crowd that were almost working with the police. They were talking to the police officers. They were filming. They were allowed to stay within the group where the police were. One particular guy I saw a lot in a red shirt that was in the videos a lot. He seemed to, you know, walk up, shake the hands of the police officers. And the police, anyone else that was filming them, they were like, move, move. And they're pushing people out of the way. But some people, they were allowing those people to stay
yep.
and to film because they saw that they were aiming their cameras and filming water protectors, that they were, you know, mocking them, or that clearly they were the hashtag back the blue guys, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you see anything like that, William?
Yes. During my arrest, actually, right after I was being arrested, there was a man who saw me and he immediately... Yeah, like you were saying, he immediately told me, go home, get a job. And for me, as a veteran, I served 4 years in the Navy. I think I left that out, but yeah, it just struck me. I'm like, okay. And I responded quickly, and I had to. It kind of, you know, I'm a veteran. I told him that straight up, and he couldn't respond. Or he did, but without confidence. He's like, well, act like it. And I'm like, no.
This is how a veteran does act.
Yeah.
As we know, many thousands of them will be coming to Standing Rock soon. But obviously there is a kind of a disconnect in the community. One thing that I mentioned to both of you that you didn't know because you were in jail is that in Bismarck recently, there were vehicles that were vandalized, water protector vehicles that were vandalized by having their tires slashed. That to me is another indicator of that escalation of anger and violence, not just by the police, but from people in the community. The media has not been very helpful in telling the story of what has been going on. Both of you seem to indicate that your particular arrest was not particularly brutal, as others have said theirs were. Did you witness anyone around you who you saw or experienced later on in the jail telling you that they were injured, that they were hurt as a result? You want to go first, Mauricio?
Most definitely. There were folks with, I mean, Will and I were the first to be put in the back of the van, and one of the officers said, oh, these two are behaving, so don't, you know. There was a sense of like, these two aren't causing any trouble, put them in the back of the van and they'll be quiet. But afterwards, you know, we heard from several who were with us that they got pushed to the ground, that they got their, you know, knees on their necks, that they busted up lips. There was one person who got pushed against the wall and cracked a tooth, and she had just had surgery.
God.
You know, there were different levels of violence done, shoving people to the ground, again, getting on people's backs. And this primarily from folks who were leaving, as you've mentioned, right? I think that William and I, well, and a couple of others towards the end, were probably the only ones who were actually participating in the prayer. The rest of them, because it was flash mob style, the police was ready for it. And the moment the main group was formed, the police encircled that group. And the rest of us, or the rest of the group that wasn't able to get into the flash mob, stayed on the outskirts. The police kept them on the outskirts, and they started filming. And so the police started pushing them out of the mall. Again, I didn't see this because I was being arrested, but from what I'm told, they were being pushed out of the mall, and as they were being pushed out and were saying, we're leaving, we're moving, but we're filming, we want to film, this is our right to film. As they were exiting the mall, that's when the police started grabbing people and arresting people. So again, what were they doing? We were all charged with criminal trespass and disorderly conduct, some others with other charges as well. But the violence was there, and it was felt and will continue to be felt, because that kind of violence, especially for people who feel like the police should be trustworthy. You know, we're experiencing it to an extent, having spent 72 hours in jail at county lockup here in Cass County after being shipped here from Bismarck, 4 hours to Fargo, and expecting to be arraigned today after 72 hours in jail and being let go and say, no, our arraignment is in a week from now, right? That the rules of how this is being handled are changing. And that is also a form of intimidation that is making it difficult on the lives of everybody involved and breeding more mistrust, distrust, if there wasn't already loads of that in the first place.
What do you think that people will think about the law enforcement response in the future? Or what do you think yourself of the law enforcement response now and in the future? And not just here, by the way. I mean, I'm talking about the impact of what people are seeing across America that is being done in Morton County. Because Black people and brown people have been telling us that the police are brutal and over-militarized for years now. Mm-hmm. And starting in 2008, after Michael Brown was killed, the country erupted in protests and in riots in response to the latest killing of the unarmed person. And what we're seeing at Standing Rock shouldn't surprise anyone.
Yeah.
So how does this... How do you think this impacts law enforcement in general? I mean, and you're a veteran. You're part of that image of, you know, protecting, serving, caring for the community, protecting our rights, fighting for the Constitution. All of the officers are sworn to that same oath.
Well, it's hard. It's very hard because they have so much control, and I think there's a different agenda from the top, from the government. And like I said, being a veteran and seeing that militarized police, it's weird because that should not be happening on our own citizens. It's uncalled for.
One of the things that they speak about at camp is the importance, again, of building a new legacy, that the work of this moment is about building a new legacy for how we as a people will gather, and that must include our police as well, that we are human beings of various tribes, but we are human beings nonetheless, and that we've got to figure out how we are going to be guests on this land together. And this is complicating it. The media complicates it. Again, the distrust makes it difficult for someone to have a conversation, to be able to debate a point, to disagree on points. Instead, it makes us all suspicious of one another. It breeds a level of fear that creates a divisiveness that ultimately is going to lead to more and more violence. So I, for one, have a lot of military in my family. I've got police officers in my family having these very difficult conversations. Because, as I'm saying, we all, when this is said and done, whatever happens to the pipeline, the people of Bismarck are going to still be the people of Bismarck. Mm-hmm. And they've got to figure out what happens to their community. Were they even a community to begin with? And what does it mean now to be a community? Which is true, I think, across the board for all of our communities, as, you know, these circumstances are shedding light on how we treat one another. What does it mean to be a community, truly? And how are we responsible to and for one another? Or is it enough to be locked up in our own spaces, consuming as much as we want to consume, and engage superficially with our neighbors? I think that that this movement in Standing Rock is calling us to something deeper than that.
So, Will, you were telling me something that you wanted to share about the police law enforcement contracts.
Yeah, so as a veteran, I served the contract, and I'm fully expected to finish out that contract, obligated, of course. But seeing these police, the officers, they are not contracted. If they feel obligated to do something that they shouldn't, or they can just turn in their badge, I feel like, and it'll be over with. But some of them, I guess, choose not to, and it's a little heartbreaking, to say the least.
To speak a bit to what William is talking about here, which I think is really important and was really important for my community back in Providence, is what's at stake in this moment? How do we recognize what's at stake? That our communities are considering, what does it mean to put a body on the line? What does it mean to move past the click activism of sharing articles on Facebook? And how, in light of this recent election, not just in this country, but around the world, how are we really recognizing what is at stake, not just for our neighbors, but for ourselves and for our future and for our past? And a lot of folks at home really like the idea that I'm here, that my friends are here, but they're struggling themselves with what does it mean to show up? And I think that's a real thing we've all got to consider, which is, I think, what William is pointing to with these police officers. Mm-hmm. If you feel that something is wrong, don't just say it's your job. What is it to say, I'm gonna challenge that too? We all have to challenge the system mm-hmm. in order to come right by it.
Mm-hmm. Silence equals violence. And with that, I'm going to lead us into a commercial break. If you have just tuned in, we are talking about, you know, the impacts of the racism in Bismarck, and, you know, also all of the water protectors, how they're experiencing the backlash of their stand at Standing Rock for the water, for the sacred land there. You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. We want to hear what you have to say as well. You can let us know if you want us to interview you, if you've been to Standing Rock, if you have a story to share. Give us a call, leave us a message at 701-566-0917. You can also tweet me at @media_PPP, or you can email me at cindy@kappfm.com or duke@kappfm.com. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM, Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. Niniwichoni, water is life.
And now you're going to hear some other interviews from other water protectors who are also arrested on Friday the 25th, Black Friday, also known as Black Snake Friday. Here's the interviews.
What was it like being in a mall in America? And you've seen flash mobs, right? Like, this is like an international phenomenon that has taken place many a time in this country. Wouldn't you say that this is somehow similar to that? And where or when have you ever seen a similar reaction?
It was designed to be kind of like a flash prayer. Honestly, that was the intention, was to do this a similar thing in a lighthearted and a good way.
And then disperse, and almost like, so people might even engage us in conversation, and then you can just, you know, have a nice educational, thoughtful conversation and just, you know, like, communicate with each
community
other.
Community outreach.
Yeah. Isn't that what flash mobs are about?
Yeah.
But there was a heavy presence of law enforcement and security as soon as we began arriving.
And they had like, tons of zip ties with them, like, before. Right. And they were all over. I mean,
there were undercovers everywhere, walking throughout.
They were all over the mall.
I wanted to ask you also about the other people that were filming you, the pro-pipeline, pro-officer people that were filming you. I saw in the videos where there were a number of people, as the police were pushing people back, you know, they were kind of clearing the area, but there were also some people who were not in uniforms, mm-hmm. who were seemingly communicating with police officers. Mm-hmm. They were running up and talking to the police officers and filming people and kind of doing crowd management. It kind of reminded me of the McKinney, Texas pool incident where there were some random people running in and trying to help the barrel rolling officer out there that was harassing black teenagers. Can you describe what you witnessed in terms of these bystanders that were kind of being vigilante police in this sense?
I personally think that they just seemed to want to see police do violence.
It happens a lot. That happens all the time. Civilians will come up and say, "Hey, we back the blue," and shake the cops' hands, and the cops will sometimes engage them in conversation. I'd say more often than not, the cops engage them in conversation, and then they're given a certain degree of leeway that others are not, which again is inequality in terms of allowing certain messages to be expressed and others not to. But that happens all the time when we engage in ceremony and prayer at anywhere. If there's people who identify as pro-pipeline or pro-police, they're often given a certain degree of latitude by the cops and the law enforcement too.
I wanted to ask you because it's remarkable to me the kinds of things that I've heard reported being done to people. I know you guys are all big tough men, but I wanted to ask you, I don't know, just show of hands. I know people in the radio world can't see this, but how many of you have been arrested before? Okay. And so
if you could see their faces.
So I wanted to ask you, what was this experience like and how is it different from what you expected?
Like, from what I understood about what the action was, it seemed like a possibility that it would go without, you know, I always think that there's a possibility of getting arrested in any kind of action, but as this one seemed particularly non-confrontational, I mean, I didn't think that, you know, from the description of, you know, what we're going to do is just like, yeah, just create a short ceremony and then disperse. And if people ask what was that, then you know, we'd talk about it. And, you know, so I thought the possibility that it, you know, nobody would get arrested is, you know, because it doesn't seem like, I mean, it's this, the, you know, it's this supposedly the sacred time of the year. So, you know, what is more sacred than that? But as soon as I got into the mall and saw the cops everywhere, I was like, oh, well, this might not go so well, but
it was very unexpected is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I did not expect that severe of a reaction for that, especially in the mall. We were leaving the mall, and we weren't even allowed to leave the mall when we were told to leave. I even heard one cop say, which I actually didn't see involved in the actions in the taking down of people, he may have, but he was like, okay, you guys made your point, now move on. And everybody did. There was nobody that was like, I mean, everybody started moving. We just slowly moved together as a group. And then they just, from all directions, they just started violently attacking people and grabbing people. And
when they asked us to leave, we started leaving.
Yeah, and well, they weren't even letting people leave. Yeah.
We were saying that the whole time. Okay, we're leaving. I mean, they prevented us from even engaging in an assembly or in ceremony.
Right.
But we accepted that and said, well, okay, we'll leave. If this is going to escalate, we don't want violence.
Yeah.
And on the way out, they began, pulling people out. And we acted to protect people. And really nothing is surprising anymore with the way this state's various counties police have responded. Like, nothing really surprises me anymore.
Yeah.
But, because I almost everybody I talked to has been brutalized in one way or another.
Yeah.
But this, in particular, with how peaceful the action was and how ceremonial and just really welcoming it was for everybody, I did not expect them to attack people that have disabilities, to pull people, specifically target people from the crowd and pull them out and pull women's hair to get them down, pull men's hair to get them down. I mean, when they started reaching for people's phones and for people to pull them out, and I just was trying to say, we're leaving, and I spread out my arms, and they ripped my jacket into, like, four pieces, trying to pull me out of the crowd.
They just ripped it to shreds.
And
people are cheering it on. Like, there's, like, customers or patrons of the mall or citizens or, you know, residents of this area that are like, yeah, you should get them all out of here. Yeah. Like, you show them. And, like, screaming at us and screaming at them and, like, cheering on the cops. So it's adding to this whole aggressive atmosphere. And then it was just so interesting because, you know, I was, like I said, I was standing around recording this prayer. And then next thing I know, like, I'm getting ripped down, I'm being arrested, and I'm looking up, and I see probably at least 10 to 20 other people recording on their phones, older white people mostly, and they're the ones that are yelling at us and cheering on the police and everything, and they're recording just how I was, except I wasn't saying a word. I was just kind of standing there recording, witnessing, and bearing witness to all this, and they're, like, you know, screaming at it and, like, you know, you know, like, yeah, like, you know, and, like, you know, trying to humiliate and, like, you know, it was really weird. It was really awkward. And as a white male in this society, you know, you hear about all this and you see this stuff in the news about, you know, people of color or, you know, just people of lesser privilege just being treated in ways like this. And it was really interesting for me. And I kind of like laughed a little bit because I was laying on the ground next to Cody and a couple other people and his two buddies, and it just was funny because, like, it really gives you perspective on, you know, when you're witnessing all this and like looking up at all these, you know, people that look like me and that have the same skin tone as me, and, you know, they're just, like, standing up there and they're just screaming and just spewing all this hate. And, like, because you don't get to witness that every day, especially where I'm from in Los Angeles. I don't get to see that. So then when I see people like that are, you know, so to speak, you know, my people, like, you know, very similar to me, it's, like, it's shocking, and it's something that, you know, you hear about, but until you really witness it, you kind of ignore it, which is, I think, part of the problem. You know, a lot of people see this from afar, or they see this on the TV, and they just kind of, like, it's easy to change the channel. It's easy to kind of be like, oh, that's terrible, and shake your head and be like, yeah, that's so glad that we don't do that. And, oh, I'm not racist, thank God. And then, you know, you see it in person, and it's like, it's just not right. And that's why we're here. You know, we're all here because we're not going to sit back and let people get bullied. We're not going to sit back and let people's civil rights be violated anymore. You know, it's like, if we're not going to stick up for other people, then, you know, who is, you know? So we're all here trying to just to make people aware and to, you know, just to kind of be here as a loving, you know, passionate force for civil rights. And then it's funny because then by doing that, you get the opposite here, apparently. You get, like, your civil rights taken away from you. You get, you know, pushed around and smacked around and threatened with things. And, you know, I was told that I was being charged with criminal trespassing.
Yeah.
And I was literally standing in a mall in America, like, watching people, like, standing around, like, like, trespassing, and then disorderly conduct, and I don't know what part of my conduct was disorderly. And then even when I was being thrown to the ground, just like everybody else in this room, none of us were resisting arrest or anything. We were complying the whole time, even though we probably had every right to be upset or to be, you know, to be aggravated and to try to fight back and defend ourselves even. But we didn't. We just totally, like, complied with everything. And then it was funny because the one officer was while standing around in cuffs, was arresting somebody else, and he was like, "What am I being charged with? What am I being charged with?" And then the officer was like, talking to one of the other officers, like, "What are you getting with? What is this?" And he's like, "Trespassing, probably." Mm-hmm. Trespassing, probably.
That happens a lot.
Yeah. So
we should mention the first person picked off, from what I saw, the first person pulled out of the group was indigenous, and then the next person was disabled, physically disabled. Right, and
these same. I have video of it. Yeah, too. We're not making that up. It's like I have literally like video of this.
And
stuff.
These same people that show up and tend to scream and shout at us and yell at us and stuff. They come out oftentimes. There's a pro DAPL constituency now that comes out to all of our, not our, but the group we work with and that we try and support and ally ourselves with. Their ceremonies and prayers are often interrupted by pro DAPL groups. And one of the signs they take most often is "not wanted here, go home," which is extremely ironic to tell.
That was shouted.
Indigenous
that was,
peoples.
That was shouted a bunch.
Yeah, to tell indigenous peoples and their allies to go home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I have a question for you because, I mean, one of the things that has been portrayed a lot by the Morton County Sheriff's Department is that there's a lot of outsiders here. And because there's been a media blackout and there's not a lot of the corporate media in the state, within the state especially, but throughout the country that have followed this same discourse that there's a bunch of outsiders here. They're paid. They're paid. People even in our family called us over the Thanksgiving holiday and said, "Yeah, you know, what's happening out there is really horrible. It's horrible. But you know what the first thing they need to do? They need to get all those outsiders, those agitators, out of here." What do you have to say to the people that call you an outsider to this issue? To the protection of water? Who wants to go first? Answering that question.
I can go quick. It's a human issue. Yeah. You can't have an outsider and a human issue, and you're allying yourself with other human beings. I mean, and honestly, what does outsider mean here? Many of the people here of European descent could be considered outsiders. They historically don't come from this land. So when you say outsiders, that's not a really clear-cut thing to say. What do you mean by outsiders? And really, the people that aren't from here are standing as allies, not as an invading force or an occupying force. It's as allies to protect and help, not even to protect, but to help other people protect themselves and to empower people who have historically not been empowered.
How about you? You've been really silent.
I think I agree with him. The idea of outsider is sort of a human construct, right? It's an abstract thing. I think that they're only trying to emphasize that because they don't agree with what we're doing. I mean, if we were here for something that they liked, then,
like,
you know,
the pipeline.
Yeah, I mean,
like construction workers brought in to work a pipeline.
You're right, yeah. And sheriffs from many different states to defend, and mercenaries.
Like people that establish man camps that brutalize and deal in the flesh of indigenous women.
Or all the different sheriff's departments that have been coming in. I mean, it's not that we're outsiders, it's just that they don't like why we're here.
I just wanted to ask you about your experience. You were arrested, which is why you're here. And first of all, I wanted to ask you how old you are, because you seem like you're pretty young.
Yeah, I'm 18. I turned 18 in September.
Wow. Just turned 18.
Yeah.
And how long have you been at the camp?
I got to Ochetti on Monday at 1:30-ish.
Okay. Had you ever been to camp before?
No.
It's the first time?
Yeah. There were people in my group who had been there before, but I'd never been there.
Where are you from?
Arkansas. Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Cool. And so what do you think of North Dakota so far?
I really like it. I like the plains. I don't like being around the buildings, and I didn't like being in the jail with no windows because I love the landscape. But
How did you get treated at the event that you were at? Were you at the mall?
I was. I was at the mall, the Kirkwood Mall in whatever the capital of the state is.
Is it a pretty nice mall?
Yeah, it's a lovely mall.
And what were you guys doing there that day?
We were praying. We gathered there together, we met there, and we formed a big circle, and we began to pray.
Mm-hmm. And that upset people at some point, and...
I don't know that it had upset anyone before my arrest. We formed the circle, and we weren't blocking any traffic. People were just going around us, and we didn't bother them, and they didn't bother us, and then we were told to disperse.
Mm-hmm.
And as we moved towards the door, people were grabbed. First, a man who was standing just a little bit to my right, who was on crutches. He couldn't walk by himself. I heard somebody shout, get his crutches. And then several police officers, I don't recall how many, it was very confusing, pulled him to the ground and handcuffed him.
So the police yelled, grab his crutches, and then the disabled person?
Yes, they arrested him. They arrested him first, and then they began to arrest other people even as we moved towards the doors.
Wow. So you were leaving?
Yeah, we were in compliance with every order they gave.
And you were praying?
Yes.
And you were not blocking the right of anyone to shop?
No, we did not.
And you were arrested? Yes. Was this the first time you've ever been arrested?
Yes, this is the first time I've ever been arrested.
How did the police treat you during your arrest? You said that they were pretty violent with the man on the crutches. What was it like when they arrested you? How many people arrested you? How many officers?
It was one officer who arrested me.
Okay. And you were zip-tied or handcuffed, or how did that go?
Yeah, they're called flex cuffs, apparently. They're like a big set of zip ties.
Okay. And what was that like?
I lost feeling in my right hand pretty quickly, but another officer, after a while, cut those ones off of me and put new ones on that were slightly more comfortable.
Did you see other people who were taken to the ground in a form or a way that you thought was not necessary, that the force that was used was not necessary?
Lots of people were slung around or thrown to the ground, especially people around me. I actually fell over on my way to the door and was arrested while I was on the ground. So I was lucky in that way. Although I was dragged along the ground and I have a rug rash on my right knee, but it's not that bad. Although, I mean, obviously it hurts. But I think the most horrifying overuse of force was the man with crutches, whose name I don't recall. I don't think I ever got it, but...
What was it like to be transported? What was your transport like?
We were put in a big red van. We didn't have seat belts. They put us in... I think... I don't know how many people each seat was intended for, but... I was kind of perched on the edge of one seat, which was interesting. They drove us down to what I think was the sheriff's department. And there we were kept in big wire cages for a bit. And then they brought in a National Guard bus to take us to the Cass County Jail.
And how long was your trip?
It was 3 or 4 hours. They took my watch before that, so I didn't have any way of telling, but...
Can't tell time. You lost all your freedom. You're on an army bus headed to somewhere you've never been.
Yep.
How long was it from... Okay, so you were walking in.
So I was walking in the mall looking for the other protectors there in the mall, and I couldn't see anyone. And then I saw all these police prepared and they were ready. Someone tipped them off, right? And at the front door, they were arresting a young girl, and she was screaming out in pain because they were zip-tying her hands too tight. And that's when I started taking pictures, just for evidence. Mm-hmm. And I tried to do it as discreetly as I can, because I didn't want to get arrested just for taking pictures, right? So that's when the cops approached me and started interrogating me because of the way I look. I couldn't really blend in because of how I was dressed, because I had hiking boots on. Mm. So anyways, long story short, they basically said, hey, you need to get out of here or get arrested, right? So that's when I got tagged. And I had to make a choice, so I decided to get away from there, right?
Thank you for listening to this important update on Standing Rock on a Mexican crossing lines. This is KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Miniwichoni, water is life.